If you are like me, you look forward to mowing the yard each week. Personally, I enjoy the time being outside and away from the stresses of life. I also like how my yard looks with a fresh cut and clean lines. Most of us could agree that a nice yard looks best right after a weekly cut. However, there is one time of year that mowing can become a chore that most of us do not look forward to. This is when Mother Nature creates optimal growing conditions in the spring with adequate moisture and near-perfect temperatures. This is the time of year when the turf needs to be mowed on its schedule and not ours. During the months of April and May, we may need to mow as much as twice a week to keep the yard looking and performing its best. Today we are going to discuss an application that we at Ryan Lawn and Tree refer to as a mowing reduction treatment. Yes, you heard me correctly. There is an application that can be applied to your yard to reduce the time between mowings during the spring flush of growth. Today, I am joined again by our turf expert, Dr. Rodney St. John. Rodney and I will be discussing how this application works and what a client can expect from the application. Welcome, Rodney.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. First of all, we've introduced you before. We had you on a previous podcast. The first thing I'd like to ask is if you could tell us what your role at Ryan Lawn and Tree is.
Sure. My role is the agronomist. So the agronomist is really dealing with the lawn program, making sure we're using the right products at the right rate that is giving us the best performance for our lawn while protecting the environment, protecting our customers, and protecting our staff.
Perfect. How long have you been with Ryan Lawn and Tree?
I've been with Ryan Lawn and Tree for 12 years, and I've been in the green industry probably 30 years.
Okay. And a PhD, is that like in family medicine?
Right.
Or
No, it's a doctor of science, right? So I went to Iowa State and got a PhD in horticulture, specializing in turf grass science.
Interesting.
Which blows people's minds, usually like, wow, you can go to school for that long? I thought you just had to mow the lawn. Well, there's a lot of science into growing green grass and making sure that you're optimizing the and maximizing the performance of your lawn to benefit the environment.
Yeah, it's an ever-evolving field. There are things out there. You got the environmental aspect. You've got new chemistries coming out. You've got new ways to control things, new genetics from plants, that type of thing that you got to be on top of all the time.
Absolutely.
So definitely something that would involve a PhD.
Thank you.
So very interesting. I got some personal questions here.
Sure.
As well. Do you like mowing?
I do not like mowing.
Okay.
In fact, I have a robotic mower at my house, and I love having it to mow my yard for me, so I do not have to mow.
Interesting. So this seems like a whole nother section we'll have to talk about, which is robotic mowers.
Right.
Yeah. I actually enjoy mowing. I call it kind of
therapy.
Therapy. It's kind of a mindless thing. And sometimes mindless things are good for your noodle because you're just out there doing your thing, working, maybe working up a sweat. And when you're finished, things look, you know, sharp.
Right.
That's when the yard looks its best, when it's got the perfect lines in it.
Yeah. And technically, there's science behind the smell of fresh cut grass, that it actually will reduce stress in you. And they haven't figured out if that's actual, the chemical of the smell of fresh cut grass that's chemically reacting in your brain, or if it's you growed up with that smell and that makes you think of kinder, gentler times when you're young, but it's definitely a proven fact that fresh cut grass reduces stress.
Interesting. My wife works at Bath and Body Works, and I picture this as a new men's scent.
I think it would be kind of neat.
Yeah. It'd be on the shelf right with, it'd be freshly cut grass and then smoked brisket.
Right.
Right next to it.
I don't know if they'd be very popular, but it sounds kind of neat.
Yeah. So interesting science and interesting. You don't think about this a lot, but there is a lot of psychological information behind grass and trees and how it can actually benefit society and people individually.
Absolutely.
Probably something for another podcast as well, but something a lot of people don't think about.
And there's whole degrees around that called horticultural therapy, you know, helping people to recover from sickness or illness or disabilities through the use of plants and green spaces.
Interesting. All kinds of stuff we can talk about in the future. So my next question down was going to be, who mows at your house? And obviously Mr. Roboto does.
Yes.
So I've answered that
string
question.
Trim. Yep. But no, it's different too. This is a sidebar. I
mean, yeah.
Most people don't like the robots because they don't give you the nice clean stripes.
Sure.
But my yard is uniform. It's the same height every day of the week. I don't have any clumps or bumps.
And last time we talked about that 1/3 rule, so I assume you're able to, it is able to mow more often. So the 1/3 rule is
doesn't apply at my
less
house
of an issue.
I'm mowing every day. Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Well, my house, it's my wife and myself that mow.
Yep.
And I thought that when we had a child, we've got a 16-year-old son, Cooper, I always envisioned that he would be the person that would cut the yard. Because that's what I did when I was a kid. I'm guessing you did that when you were a kid, too?
I had a little lawn mowing business.
It was an expectation. Not quite the case anymore. And more so that it's not that he can't mow, or he doesn't even want to mow, but I like perfect lines. My wife even likes even perfecter lines, because I don't make them as well as she does, so... A lot of times it's a battle between her and myself of who's actually going to mow.
Yep.
So interesting. I always like to ask people if they enjoy the mowing
or
not, because it kind of helps me out, because some people do and some people don't.
I used to.
Yeah. Back in the day.
Yep.
So we're going to switch directions here a little bit. We're going to talk about this mowing reducer application that we use at Rylon Tree. We're going to talk about expectations, timing, the science behind it. Definitely want to talk about that as well. It's something I use on my personal yard, a benefit of being a Ryan Lawn and Tree employee, because I'm an arborist. I don't know much about turf short of mowing and edging, is I get to have a Ryan Pro come to my property and maintain my yard.
Yep.
And it looks nice right now. Good. We're in spring and it's looking really nice. But one thing that I always have done, and I always said this when I retire, there's two applications that I would always pay for, and that is a grow reducer, a mow reducer on my property, a plant growth regulator, and a fungicide application. Yep. I think they're the two things, especially in the Midwest with cool season grasses, that people tend to overlook.
Takes your lawn to the next level.
And it kind of, makes it pop. It takes it to that kind of next level. So we'll be talking about this today. In the future, we're going to talk about the fungicide applications as well, because I think all of that rolls into just having, you know, what I call that cherry yard.
Yep.
More so than just herbicide applications and fertilizer applications. There's other things we can do to make them look really sharp.
Absolutely.
So first thing, what is a mowing reduction application? And did I call that the right thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it could be called a lot of different things. Mowing reduction, mow reducer, clipping yield reducer. And that's the way I like to think of it. I mean, it sounds nice as a mowing reducer, but you touched on it earlier in the introduction when we talked about the 1/3 rule. And the 1/3 rule, so let's go back to mowing a little bit to lay the groundwork. But the 1/3 rule would be, when I'm mowing a lawn, I never want to remove more than 1/3 of the leaf tissue at any one time. So, for example, if I'm maintaining Kentucky bluegrasses at 2 inches high, I don't want to let it grow higher than 3 inches before I cut the clippings off, because that gives me 1-inch clipping, 1 to 2.
A question on this.
Mm-hmm.
That is the rule.
Right.
I always love the why of things. Why is that a rule? What was the negative impact to the plant?
It's so great question. And I like to joke around when I give classes and talk about, well, the grass has feelings. it doesn't necessarily have feelings, but think about the grass as a factory, right? And its goal is to absorb sunlight, produce carbohydrates or food for the rest of the plant, so it can grow a deep root system and spread out across the lawn. So if the factory gets really, really tall one day and it's producing lots of food, and then you come by and cut it all the way off or cut half or more of it off, it's not going to know what to do. It's going to be like, wow, I lost half of my factory, half of my workforce. So I got to go into survival mode and stress out and not focus on growing, just focus on surviving. So that's the health aspect of the 1/3 rule, is to get the grass conditioned that it's going to be mowed frequently enough, and the plant is only going to be so high, so it knows how to grow within those heights.
Okay.
The second thing is clipping management. If you let a grass that normally grows 2 inches, like if we want to have fescue and bluegrass in the springtime at 2 inches, if we let it grow to 5 inches and then cut it off, now we've got a 3-inch long clipping that is not easily dispersed across the yard. And that's where you get into people that need to bag their clippings, and then you got to find a place to dispose of those properly, a compost facility, and just gets into a whole lot of other mess. So if you can follow the 1/3 rule, your clippings will be easily dispersed across the yard, and you don't have to bag them and haul them away.
Yeah, and there's probably, along with the health standpoint, there's also the aesthetic standpoint. When it's that time of year, this time of year right now, when my yard's growing so quick, a lot of times the clippings are sitting right on top of the yard, and they're more visible. But if I mow more often,
They'll fall down in.
They're not as visible. Right. So it's an aesthetic thing as well as a science type aspect as well.
And it's a rule, but it's really a guideline. I mean, if you can't do it every week because it rained, the world's not going to come to an end. Just try to do it as much as you can, but realize that there's going to be times of the year when it's raining or you're on vacation and you'll have to miss a time and it gets a little long. Bag those and then compost those properly and get back on the 1/3 rule.
Yeah, and I think it's important, whatever plant it is, you mentioned that it's a food factory. And a lot of times we refer to fertilizer as plant food, but I always like to change that paradigm because really fertilizer is the building blocks for a plant to create food.
Correct.
Create sugars to grow. And the leaf surface is the solar panel that creates that energy. So the more we cut off, the less solar panel we're going to have to create energy, and it stresses it as well. So thanks for kind of diving back into what the 1/3 rule is and why it applies.
Then let's circle back around. So then you talked about how you're mowing quite frequently this time of year, and on cool season lawns like tall fescue, Kentucky bluegrass, this is the time of year, April, they start growing very rapidly. And so to follow that 1/3 rule, you might have to mow every 4 days, maybe every 5 days, maybe every 3 days, depending on how well the spring is going.
Sure.
Then when you get closer to later into May, it can start turning into once a week. But then the opposite happens. If we're not getting a lot of rain and you're not irrigating your lawn, you might have to mow your lawn in the summertime, a cool season lawn, once every 10 days or every 12 days. So it evens out over the course of the year.
Right.
And the opposite would be the true for Bermuda and Zoysia grass. You know, they're not growing right now, or they're not growing very much. So once every 7 to 10 days as they're starting to come out of dormancy. And then in the summertime when they start cranking up, you know, Bermuda could be mowed once every 3 to 5 days, depending on moisture and everything else that goes into growing Bermuda.
Yeah, I'm definitely a weekly mowing type of person. But when I get into that April, May timeframe, it's every probably 5 days, sometimes 4 days if getting excessive rain as well.
Yep.
But that's what I got to do to keep up with it and keep it looking nice.
And that's where the mower reducer can help.
Okay.
So back to the 1/3 rule, right? And the clippings and all that stuff we talked about, how you may need to mow every 5 days. Well, with the mow reducer, then you can stay on that once a week schedule, and hopefully the mow reducer will reduce the growth of the grass or slow it down so that you can maintain those clippings, or those clippings can be easily dispersed across the yard.
Okay, so this seems like in our industry, along with a lot of industries, there's snake oil.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you're telling me that I can put something on my yard, or I have to have a professional put on. We'll talk about that later on. We can put something on a client's yard.
Yep.
And I will have to mow less. This seems like something that I would purchase that really wouldn't live up to expectations. Talk to me a little bit about what the science is, sure, actually how it works. And then also talk about the expectations of the application.
Okay.
You just spoke that it slows down the mowing, but some people might perceive it as just stopping the mowing totally. Sure. But how does this quote unquote snake oil
magical
work?
Stuff.
Magical stuff work.
Well, the technology's been around for more than 30 years. I think the product we're using was first introduced in 1992, which seems like a long time ago. But that goes to show that it's been around for a long time and it's been proven on golf courses. We've been using it, Ryan, since it first was available for lawn care. So we've been using it for more than 25 years as well. So it's excellent technology. It does work. The product we're using is Trenexa Pack Ethyl, which goes by lots of different trade names. One of the most common is Primo. So the way this works is it reduces the ability for the plant to produce gibberellic acid. So gibberellic acid is the stuff that helps have plant cells to elongate and also to divide. And that's the way plants grow, right? The cells will stretch out and get bigger, or they'll continue to divide and grow new cells. And so by reducing the ability for the plant to produce gibberellic acid, that's the hormone that says divide more, grow longer. And so the plant doesn't divide as many cells and doesn't grow, each cell doesn't grow as long. So it'll stay shorter.
Interesting. So when I went to college, I studied more floriculture, greenhouse growing, that type of thing, nursery crops. And that was, we would actually apply gibberellins to plants to stretch them. So to do the inverse of this, to talk about it a little bit, we could use something like gibberellic acid as a plant hormone to make long stem roses. We could stretch that stem out to get that 18-inch long stem where normally it was 6 or 8 inches. So this is suppressing that naturally in the plant.
Correct.
So that we keep the cells packed closer together and keep them from the grass from growing so quick.
Yep. And it's a liquid application sprayed over top of the lawn. The lawn blades absorb the product and reduce the gibberellic acid there in the lawn blades. It'll move throughout the plant, but it actually doesn't affect the way roots grow is slightly different. So this product doesn't affect the way roots grow. So it'll slow the top ground down, but still keep roots growing at the same pace or even more rapidly.
Interesting. I think something too for our listeners that's important is you gave that fancy chemical name.
Sure.
And I always like to tell people that a lot of the products that we use are similar to pharmaceuticals. When they first come out to the marketplace, they usually are a branded or a trademark name, and we have to pay a premium for them.
Mm-hmm.
Same way that if a new chemistry came out to the pharmaceutical world, we would get...
Which is good because it helps support the research that developed that product, and you can't have new products being developed without paying for those premiums for a while.
Exactly. Yeah, it is what it is. It wouldn't have been here if it wasn't, and the people that put it together should reap the harvest of what they put together. So a lot of times you'll find a professional like yourself or a tree professional speaking in chemistry names because we're actually at a point where a lot of what we have, because a lot of new chemistry doesn't come out like when you and I were younger, and the chemistry is now quote unquote generic.
Sure.
So we're able to go out in the marketplace because we've got different providers. So I wanted to throw that out there.
Sure.
That sometimes we're going to speak in these podcasts on chemistry names because they cover a broad range of things that are all the same.
Advil, ibuprofen, Tylenol, acetaminophen, that type of thing.
Exact same thing. And it's really just like how the pharmaceuticals come to the marketplace as well.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you. So we've talked about the science of it. We've talked about expectations. When is this applied to the yard? Can I spray it anytime? If I go on vacation in August, can I go out and hit the yard with it and not have to worry about mowing?
Well, the good news is, yes, you can apply it anytime.
Okay.
The benefits are, you may not reap the benefits at that time of year, so it kind of depends on the grass and what you're trying to achieve. For cool season lawns like tall fescue and Kentucky bluegrass, we're wanting to apply it in that April timeframe because that's when we're getting a large, rapid growth response of the grass naturally, and so we want to help slow that down so we can maintain those clippings, have a nice-looking lawn. If we're dealing with Bermuda grass, it's going to be maybe late May, depending on where you are in the country, all the way through August. We typically will not apply this product on cool season lawns in the summertime, mainly because, and it's kind of one of the questions you want to ask later is, what are the downsides of this product? And one of the downsides is if you did get some disease damage or stress and the grass needs to grow faster to recover from the disease damage, then this would cause a problem with that, right? So we get a disease in cool season lawns like tall fescue, we'll get a brown patch. And so if you sprayed this in August and you got some brown patch damage or pythium damage, you're not going to get the lawn to recover as fast because it's being slowed down by the mow reducer.
Okay, every time I ask a question, I have more questions.
Sure.
I love this.
Yes.
So you talked about using it on bluegrass, using it on fescue, using it on Bermuda grass. Is there grasses that we don't apply it to?
No, we apply it to all of our lawn grasses, absolutely.
Can we get the same sort of efficacy or results on the different species of plants? Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah.
If one works better on fescue or bluegrass or Bermuda, that type of thing.
Yep. The usually the repeat or the interval of response is about 30 days, and it all comes down to rate, right? So tall fescue requires a little bit more product than Kentucky bluegrass, and Bermuda requires a little bit less than that as well. So it's just a matter of what grass you're using and putting it down at the right rate.
Okay.
Then you'll achieve the same about 30 days of response.
Perfect. So 30 days of reduced mowing.
Right.
So when I explain this to clients, I'm looking at, in a normal 30 days, I'm mowing it 4 times every 7 days. When I'm in the April-May timeframe, I may be mowing 7 or 8 times. Depending on what the weather is. But normally in the Midwest, in Kansas City, where I'm at, that's usually the case.
Yep.
I'm mowing more often. So I'm able to squeeze that down closer to that 7-day range, which also has some other added benefits from my time. Because yes, that's, even though I enjoy mowing, I don't like mowing on the grass's schedule.
Sure.
Getting home and saying, I'm going to mow tomorrow, and then I have to mow today because it's so tall. And the aesthetics, because it stays kind of mowed longer.
Yeah. Looks nicer.
It looks
doesn't
nice.
Get uneven height in between mowings.
Right. It stays as longer much as well. So we talked about 30 days. How do I apply this to the yard? Is this something as a homeowner I could go as buy at the shop, or is this only a professional grade product?
So it is something you could buy, especially in today's internet society. You can buy it online. You could probably buy it at a lot of garden stores. I will say that it is hard to do as a homeowner. I have done it in my home lawn before I joined Ryan Lawn Tree. I would buy this material and put it in a backpack sprayer and try to spray it out on my lawn. The hard part is making sure you get it down even, right? Because if you walk across your lawn with a backpack sprayer and you're trying to spread it out evenly, if you overlap too much your spray or underlap your spray, you're going to notice it in your lawn. You're going to have, because back to where we talked about the tall fescue having one rate and bluegrass having another rate, it's all rate dependent. So if you apply too much in one area, the grass is going to be even more dwarf and may even turn brown because you've put too much material in that spot.
Okay.
Likewise, the opposite. If you miss a spot, now you're going to have this strip or patch that doesn't slow down and grows real rapidly in that spot. So it's really hard to get a uniform application without being a professional trained applicator using professional equipment.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people like to consider themselves do-it-yourselfers when it comes to things like turf. Another great example of using a Ryan Pro is understanding the dynamics of that, identifying the species of plant, applying the proper rate, applying it evenly.
Yes.
We talk a lot about being able to walk at a certain speed so that we get X amount of gallons and product down per 1,000 square feet. So it even gets down to how quickly or how slowly you walk.
Correct.
And that's consistent as well. And then we just had an event here at Ryan's where we actually calibrated things to make sure that everybody was calibrated the same way so that we were applying things as consistently as possible.
Yep.
So I think just another great reason to hire a Ryan Pro. There are some things that I consider that you can do to your turf as a homeowner, but this is probably one of those ones. And would you agree that probably better off hiring a pro to do it?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I did this before I joined Ryan Lawn & Tree, and I would have little triangles of tall growing grass and triangles of short growing grass as I walked across the yard trying to wave my backpack wand back and forth and trying to make a nice even coverage, and it wasn't very nice.
Okay. Well, definitely another great example of hiring a professional. So we've talked about all the expectations and the science and everything. Personally, on my yard, this may seem weird, and I want to know about this. When my Ryan Pro comes out and applies the product to my yard, yeah, we reduce the mowing. I'm mowing less, so I observe that. But it's almost like it's hard to say, but it's like it makes my yard look better. And I'm not speaking from the mowing standpoint or the reduction of mowing or less clippings on the yard, but it's almost like it seems darker green.
Yeah.
Is that possible? Is that
absolutely
okay?
And it comes down to science, right? So back to the reducing the gibberellic acid and reducing the number of cells and keeping them shorter and compact and not elongating. It's all about the concentration of the chlorophyll, which is the green stuff in the plant. So if you can imagine, you have an individual cell with an X amount of chlorophyll in it. If the cell gets longer, then that chlorophyll is going to be a little more diluted in that individual cell. Where if you have an X amount of chlorophyll and the cell stays nice and compact, it's going to be more concentrated, giving you that darker green appearance.
Interesting. So
it sounds
when I
super technical, but it's absolutely the fact that because the grass is dwarfer, a word.
Yeah. It is
compact,
today.
Yes, it is today. More compact, there's going to be more concentrated chlorophyll in those leaves, and it's going to be darker green color.
Very, very interesting. And I've tried to explain this, you know, to other people, and they look at me like I'm crazy, but now I'll be able to explain to them that it's just, there's more green things closer together, so
right,
it has a darker appearance to it.
So then you take that one step farther, and chlorophyll is the stuff that the plant uses in your solar panel example to absorb sunlight and produce carbohydrates or food for the plant. So now if we have more darker green chlorophyll in the plant, it can do a better job at absorbing more sunlight and producing food. And because the gibberellic acid is not allowing the top of the plant to grow as fast as it used to, it's got to do something with that food. And so it sends it down to the root system and actually stimulates root growth. And so you're not noticing that because you're not under the ground.
Sure.
But if you were under the ground, you would notice that on your lawn, you're getting enhanced root growth because of this growth regulator application.
And enhanced root growth turns into what kind of results later on in the season?
The first one on my mind would be drought resistance. Okay. You're going to get a longer, deeper root system, which gives you a deeper soil profile to absorb moisture from and withstand a longer drought. So enhanced drought tolerance, the root system combined with the more compact plant cells is going to give you better stress tolerance just in general. It's not been shown to be like, how do you want to say? I don't have any scientific papers to talk about traffic stress, but it is, anything to do with stress is going to be improved with a growth regulator.
Okay. Could you, I assume like in trees, grass plants store energy in the root system as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a larger root system, we're storing more energy also to get through difficult times as
Correct.
Well as being able to absorb things out of the soil as well.
Right. And I didn't talk about Kentucky bluegrass, Bermuda grass, zoysia grass. They all spread by spreading structures under the ground or near the surface of the ground called rhizomes and stolons.
Okay.
And because we have more of that food, it's allowing those plants to spread out across the yard. Likewise with tall fescue, it doesn't spread with rhizomes or stolons, but tillering. And so by using the growth regulator, that extra food is used to help spread the grass laterally across the yard.
And fill that
a tongue twister.
Yeah. Laterally. Fill that void by my sidewalk that I can't get grass to grow in.
Yes.
It can help to fill that void in quicker.
Potentially.
Okay. We've talked about everything to do with this, all the positives.
Uh-huh.
Every time I talk to somebody, I was talking to my doctor the other day, and he's telling me all these positives of, you know, you need to take this medication because of these positive things. The question I asked him was, well, what are the negatives?
Mm-hmm.
I assume with anything like this, there has to be some downside. So yeah. I always want to ask that question.
Sure,
is there any negative impact to using this product?
I have a couple of ideas, but can I come back to one positive that I forgot to mention?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So the other benefit would be if you have grass growing in the shade. So grass growing in the shade typically is like it can't get enough sunlight, right? So it's like, hey, I need more sunlight. So it actually enhances the production of gibberellic acid. Grass is grown in the shade, says make more gibberellic acid so I can make longer leaves so I can reach out and grab more sunlight. And so that's why grass growing in the shade gets real long and lanky and not very stiff and just not good looking.
Sure.
So applying Primo to those areas, it's not necessarily going to make you have more grass in the shade, but it's going to make that grass that is growing in the shade be healthier and stay compact.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good for the shade.
Yep.
So back to the negatives. Really, there aren't too many negatives. I mean, if you overapply the product, it can slow down or it could potentially burn the grass. We kind of touched on that when we talked about the brown patch problem in tall fescue. If you get disease or damage in the yard during the time of the application, it's going to be slower for the grass to grow out of that. I mean, when we have diseases on lawns, usually the first approach is to get the lawn to grow, get rid of the diseased material and produce new, clean, undiseased material from below.
Sure.
And if you have that growth regulator, it's going to take longer for you to get rid of that diseased leaf material to see the young ones.
A question on this, because I have observed this on my personal property. What dictates that my yard would get brown patch? I mainly have a fescue yard. Uh-huh. What dictates that my yard would get brown patch during the time when the plant growth regulator is working on the plant?
It's the stupid question or a stupid answer would be luck.
Okay.
But the more scientific answer is it's has to do with the local environment at your property.
Okay.
The brown patch pathogen is in every property around the whole Midwest. It's in the soil. In fact, there's been studies that show that the brown patch spores are here in this room in the carpet right now because it came in on somebody's shoes and it's in everybody's house. So
yep.
It's everywhere. So whether you have it and your neighbor doesn't comes down to the environmental conditions that are in your property. How susceptible is the variety of tall fescue that you have in your lawn compared to your neighbor's variety? How much more humid is your lawn compared to your neighbor's yard? Because brown patch needs to, it's a fungal disease, so it needs to have high humidity levels. And then how windy or how much sun, all those things go into play with how whether or not you're going to get brown patch.
Yep. And that's what I've observed on my personal property. It's usually when summer comes early.
Right.
When we get higher humidity, higher temperatures, less air movement, it seems like I observe this type of damage on the yard during that growth regulator time period.
Yep.
Are there any other downsides besides improper application, and that's why we would hire a pro, and this disease interface that goes along with it as well?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Nope, absolutely not.
Awesome. I think we've covered about everything related to this topic. It does kind of segue into our next podcast, which will be a discussion of diseases.
Yeah.
Mainly brown patch, probably dollar spot, on the different types of turf that we manage, especially the cool season turf. So we'll be back and visit on that in a week or two as well.
Yep.
Any other comments or things that you want to talk about related to plant growth regulators before we move on?
Yeah. I mean, I'll circle back to what you said earlier. Like when you retire from this company, you're going to pay for your own services. That this is one service that you'd pay for. And I would echo that sentiment. I mean, I love the way that it keeps my lawn compact and tight and has that darker green color. I feel like I see the benefits of that deeper rooting system. And this works, we both have tall fescue lawns, but this works very excellent for Bermuda grass lawns as well, keeping it compact and tight and reduce the amount of clippings that you receive in between mowings during those rapid growth. I think it's an excellent product.
Yeah, I've nothing but positive things on my own property. And it is something that, you know, it's not even something I would purchase. It would be something I would invest in, because of the benefits it has to my property and property value and things like that. And selfishly, when I'm out there pulling my, sprinkler around, because I don't have a sprinkler system, it's nice to get those compliments from the neighbors.
Yes.
And say, man, you got the nicest yard on the block. And these things roll into that.
Yep.
For sure. Well, thank you for your time, Rodney. Look forward to seeing you again in a week or two.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ryan Lawn and Tree Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to show your support, please like, share, and subscribe. And if you're interested in having one of our turf experts take care of your lawn, please reach out to us at ryanlawn.com, and we would be happy to have one of our turf managers come out and give you a free estimate. And also, a little secret, we're offering 50% off of your first application. Visit us at ryanlawn.com.